Well, welcome to the Sex Help with Carol
Radio
Show. And I
welcome
am Carol.
Welcome to Your Best Life with Carol the Coach.
Sure.
Do you question your abilities, your appearance, your age, or your wisdom? Let Carol the Coach empower you to break free of your fears so you can accomplish your dreams. Are you ready to create the life you deserve? As a personal coach, Carol brings you 25 years as a trained psychotherapist, an unparalleled experience to get you closer to your goal.
Yeah, unparalleled experience to get you closer to your goal, but that was not good. Hi, I'm Carol the Coach, and I am here with you on Sex Help with Carol the Coach. And what do? Every week we talk about sexual addiction, and I kind of help you to figure it out as well as give you the newest resources that I think would be most helpful for you. Now, I have an intro. That wasn't it. I'm not quite sure what that was. Shame on my producer, so that's why I kind of cut it short. Let me tell you a little bit about me so that you'll know who you're listening to, because, again, this is a very explicit niche. This is something that so many people are dealing with, but nobody is talking about it. And I am on Blog Talk Radio wanting to destigmatize this problem and wanting to get you the help that I 100% believe you deserve. So that's why I put this show together. We're going to be interviewing experts. I actually had somebody scheduled tonight to talk about what his sexual addiction was like. And what ends up happening with live radio is sometimes you have cancellations. That is just what happens. So that's okay. I've been doing this for years and years and years, and I certainly have enough information that hopefully will keep you captivated and will also help you work through, do you have a sexual addiction? And if you're at that place where you know, yes, I absolutely know I have a sexual addiction, then we can get you to the right resources, because it's all about infrastructure. And infrastructure is key. If you don't have the right infrastructure, it doesn't matter what your intention is. It's not going to work. So I just want you to get comfortable with me. I want you to just sit in every Monday night at 9 o'clock and see what we have to offer. And I do believe that this is the only show that talks about sexual addiction. You know, we're going to be talking about the different types of sexual addiction. You may find that you suffer from one, two, or three types. We're going to talk about what you need to do to get your life on track, to begin recovery. And I have to tell you that I've been trained by one of the best. Dr. Patrick Carnes has made it his mission to help people who suffer from sexual addiction. If you want to go to one of his websites, it's www.sexhelp.com. Hence, the name of my website, which is www.sexhelpwithcarolthecoach.com. And they have spent their entire lifetime not only helping addicts, but training professionals to know what to do in this kind of situation. Because if you're listening to this show, you know you're a pioneer. You know that although sexual addiction has been around forever, when the internet became popular in the late 80s, early 90s, pornography, sexual addiction exploded. And what we have seen in the last two decades are things that we've never seen before in human mankind. And so, you know, you may think you don't have the willpower to fight sexual addiction, but I got to tell you, it's not just willpower, it is neurocircuitry occurring in the brain that you're fighting against. You know, I was talking to a family today, and I was talking to a mom, a dad, and their son, who was 20, and I was trying to explain that it wasn't just an issue of willpower. It really was that this young man has learned how to light up his brain in such a way that he is constantly looking for that next high. He's constantly looking for that next pornographic internet site, that next experience that's going to produce the same electromagnetic fields in his brain that he's experienced before. And for anybody who's an addict, and I suspect that there are some addicts on the line, because what we know about sexual addiction is that there typically is another addiction involved. Euphoric recall is something that is so pertinent. It is something that truly the addict is always looking for. You know, that last time you saw some pictures or paraphernalia that absolutely captivated you, took you to that next high, allowed you to pleasure yourself in a way that you thought you'd never been pleasured before. I mean, this is the kind of stimulation that the addict is looking for. And I tried to explain to the parents not only about the actual high, but I said, if your brain lights up a certain way after you've seen something, not only do you go looking for it again, but you want to find that same circuitry. And so you go on a mission to do that. And that's neuroscience. That isn't willpower. That's not a moral issue. That is neuroscience. So just know that, you know, there are people out there that get it. We are called CSATs. We're Certified Trained Sexual Addiction Therapists. And we are not only understanding behaviors, but we are studying research and brain neuroscience, and we want to really make a difference in your life, both from an emotional standpoint, a physiological standpoint, and a neurological standpoint. So, okay, last week we kind of talked about what is sexual addiction. You know, there's a lot of controversy. Is it real? Does it exist? Are there withdrawals? Should you really call it sexual addiction? And you heard me say that more than likely in our psychiatric diagnostic manual, it's going to be called hypersexuality. And that fits. You know, we don't care what you call it. It's what you do that counts. And truly, when you're looking to change your life, when you're looking to move into recovery, what we know more than anything is that you have to be able to affect all aspects of your life. You need to look at your spiritual connection. You need to look at your relationship connection. There's no doubt that you need to look at the physical connection. And you have to go through the steps to make your life right again. And that's why the 12-step program is so healing and provides that support to not only control, manage, and recover from the addiction, but also to make your life better, to actualize you, to move you into that next place. And I can't emphasize that enough. If you are listening right now and you want to call in, give us a call at area code 646-595-3284. We're more than happy to take your calls. We want to start a dialogue. This is a new show. I know it's going to take a while to catch fire. And again, it's not necessarily something you're going to be listening to as the kids come in and out of the room. So feel free to go to iTunes. And in the search bar, go to Sex Help with Carol the Coach. And it will pull me up, as well as it will allow you to subscribe free. And you will get every single show that we do. Now, I have to tell you, this is week two, so it's not like you're going to get a whole host of shows. But you might actually just put me in your search bar anyway, Carol the Coach, and listen to Your Best Life. You know, I'm a psychotherapist and a life coach, and I do my very best to help people to get to where they need to go. So, again, feel free to give me a call. Get your pen and paper out. It is 646-595-3284. I know that if you're listening right now, you know that it's blogtalkradio.com/sexhelp with Carol the Coach. Now, let me just talk to you a little bit about recovery. You know, as we were talking last week, I so badly wanted you to know that it's imperative that we break through the denial. You know, I had a young man who was sleeping with his girlfriend's friend. Yep, you're right, his girlfriend's friend. And while she was asleep, he touched her. And there may be people that say, well, what's the big deal, Carol? That was just a touch. All boys do it. But I got to tell you that the big deal is that that was a sexual addiction called frauderism. It's touching people without their knowledge. And it is a huge deal because it's a violation of their boundaries. So there's no judgment here. But as long as people who are having issues rationalize, minimize, justify, and defend their behavior, they're not going to get the help that they need to get. So, therefore, you know, it was really important for me to say to this young man, hey, this is big stuff. You know, as long as you take advantage of people behind their back, you're not going to get the help that you need. And if you don't get the help that you need, this disease, this illness is going to get worse and worse and worse. Because, you know, as with any addiction, when you have an issue, when you have a problem, it may get better for a while, but then it gets worse again. And when it gets worse, the behaviors, the loss of control, the preoccupation, the obsessiveness, well, there's no doubt that it progresses to a much more defined state. You think it's out of control now, give it 5 years if you don't get a handle on it. And the bad news is that there aren't a lot of resources for you. Now, I live in Indiana, and we do not have a hospital to treat sexual addiction. As a matter of fact, the biggest drug and alcohol facility in our state is afraid they'll lose funding if they treat it. And so they don't want to touch it. Thank goodness there are other facilities, the Meadows, Pine Grove, the Ranch, Keystone. Those are places that get that this is a problem and know that we've got to do something about it. And thank goodness, because I'm telling you, a lot of times somebody can't stop without some sort of major intervention. You know, therapy is not enough. Even the 12-step process is not enough. And when that occurs, then, you know, the next step is to go to a hospital setting. And again, I'm not happy to tell you that oftentimes that's not covered by insurance. But you know what? You can't afford not to go. And that's what I want to tell you. You just absolutely cannot afford not to go. Because why? Because then recovery can't occur if you don't get the help you really need. And we know that it interferes on so many levels with relationships, with your work. So that's what we're going to be talking about a little bit today. And I want you to know that I do get that this is something that's really difficult to talk about and probably even to listen to. Why would I say that? You know, what's going on? Well, I got to tell you, most people are in denial. And when I say denial, I mean that most people, they want to believe it's something they can control. They want to believe that if they will it away, they can will it away. And they don't want to look at their other addictions. Let me just give you a little insight. You know, when we're looking at the different types of sexual addiction, the majority of people that will listen to this show will probably fall into voyeurism. And, you know, 20 years ago, voyeurism meant that you looked through a window at somebody else. But today, voyeurism typically means internet sites, pornography. And most people will be into fantasy sex. And again, that's after looking at internet sites. You know, you close your eyes, you're pleasuring yourself, and you're thinking fantasy. Okay, so fantasy sex makes up about 18% of the population, and voyeurism, and this is, of course, a population of a sex addict. Voyeurism also takes up about 18%. But there are other types of sex that you may or may not be have difficulty with. Exhibitionism or anonymous sex. That's prostitution. Trading sex. Unfortunately, a lot of people in powerful positions trade sex for favors. Exploitive sex, of course, is taking advantage of people, whether that be young boys, young girls, kids, whatever. Then you have pain exchange sex. Obviously, that's S&M. That's where people are hurting themselves. Seductive role sex, intrusive sex. Those are all different types of sexual behavior that can contribute to the making of a sex addict. Now, with that addiction typically comes other addictions. Chemical dependency, eating disorders, compulsive gambling, spending, or working. So that can help to fool you. You know, if you are a workaholic, you come home at 8 o'clock at night, you don't have much of a relationship, and you just don't know how you're going to have a little fun. You know, TV's not getting it for you. You don't really have relationships. You can't call somebody or text somebody. So you get on the computer and you get into a chat room. Or you get on different porn sites and just kind of will away the evening. And before you know it, it's 2 o'clock. You got to get up at 6. You've only had 4 hours sleep. You're exhausted. And you have to force yourself to go to bed despite the fact that you're 100% tired. So what we know is that workaholism goes hand in hand with sexual addiction, as does many of the other compulsions. You know, there's a lot of people, and you may be one of them, that you have to have a drink or two or three. You may need to have a joint, some coke, some meth. before you can really enjoy whatever it is that you do for sexual pleasure. And, you know, the other thing we really know is that, gosh, you probably didn't come from the best of homes. 87% of all addicts have addicts in their family. 77% of all family systems are rigid. The 87% are disengaged. So either you came from a family that had strict moral byproducts, and maybe just even, you know, there was a time you went to bed, there was a time you got up, there were rules, you went to church, you went to school, you dressed a certain way. The family had a lot of rules for you. Or it was the other extreme. You know, mom and dad really weren't there for you emotionally. They didn't supervise you real well. And so you did whatever you needed to do. You kind of flew by the seat of your pants. Well, there's no doubt that there are many factors that feed into sexual abuse. And what we know is that there's usually an emotional component, a sexual component, or a physical component. Now, last week we talked about the different behaviors that feed into sexual addiction. You know, is there a compulsive component, loss of control, efforts to stop, loss of time? You know, I can't tell you how many men that I've worked with, they get on that internet, and the next thing they know, 8 hours have gone by, and they didn't get their work done, and they didn't get to play with the kids, and they didn't get to call their mom, and they didn't get to do their chores. And what do you do when you haven't done what you're supposed to do? You act like you're in denial. You act like, what's the big deal? Quit making a big deal out of my life. And so, you know, we clearly know that defense mechanisms are a heightened part of any kind of addiction. You have to be in denial, and you have to play the part. And it all goes hand in hand. Now, most oftentimes, there is this real urge to stop. As a matter of fact, when you think about stopping, it causes distress, it causes anxiety, restlessness, irritability, physical discomfort. You come up with a day, you come up with a time, you convince yourself you're going to do it, and the next thing you know, you say, oh, I'll do that tomorrow. I'll start next week. I'll start after my vacation's over. I'll start on the weekends. And so just as with any behavior that you want to stop, there are a lot of withdrawal symptoms that do cause considerable distress. And I want you to know that I get that. That's something that's got to be pretty hard to actually talk about, because if you were to talk about it, you'd have to be admitting that you have a problem, and you'd have to be probably talking to somebody who either does or does not have a problem. You know, there's this thing called the addictive cycle, and it's where all, you know, you have this belief, you have this drive, and it may be something like, oh, this isn't going to hurt anybody. And there's a lot of impaired thinking and a lot of unmanageability. You know, you think you got it under control, but you really don't. And then you get very preoccupied about the behavior. You do it at anybody's expense. You maybe even create rituals around it. Maybe it's the minute the wife walks out of the house to go to the PTA meeting. Or maybe You know, you do your checkbook, and as soon as you're done dealing with money, you get a little relief by going and getting on a chat room. A lot of compulsive behavior. I had a very, very wonderful couple, and they really, they were struggling to make it. And he, well, they both were working with me. And we had a really productive Saturday morning session. And he emailed me and he said, "Carol, you know, I just really got a lot out of today. I am so blessed to have you. Just like the 12 steps say, I have a lot of gratitude for the help that I'm getting and for my wife and for my recovery." And that night, he was doing the 5 languages of love, working on improving his relationship. He was finishing up a homework assignment. He was preparing a presentation, and he was getting on plenty of fish because for the first time ever, he had heard that there was somebody who was interested in getting to know women and had contacted 100 women. 100 women, and that so fascinated him that there would be somebody that had done that, that he thought, "I got to check out this site." And so that's what he did. He compartmentalized. Here he was being a good husband. He was being good to himself. And he was pursuing his addiction. Now, the interesting thing is, but this man, who is truly very, very savvy and computer savvy, that is, he left his computer open to that page. So when his wife pulled it open to get a Google on, you know, a MapQuest kind of thing, she found the Plenty of Fish page. It came right up, and then she saw that he had emailed 7 or 8 women. Now, this is a man who was working his recovery program, or so it would have seemed. But obviously, people go in and out of this kind of addiction, and they, until they've got all their supports in place, they may not have what it takes to really make a difference. You know, he needed a good sponsor. He needed a 12-step program. He needed a good counselor. He needed to do his bibliotherapy. He needed to read. He needed to meditate. And he needed to take care of some of his other obligations. But as you can see, it's a lot of work to change your life and to deal with this demon called sexual addiction. I must tell you, though, he's done a really very good job. He's had one slip in maybe the last couple years, and he's just done an amazing job. He gets it. And he's doing exactly what he needs to do to stay in recovery. Now, would I place bets on him? I'm not stupid enough to think that I could place bets on anybody. But what I do believe is the more you work a program and really work it, the less likely you are to fall into any kind of slip or relapse behavior. And for some of you that don't know, a slip is when you pursue some sort of behavior that is acting on your sexual addiction. A relapse is when it goes into many ongoing behaviors. And so, you know, neither one of them are good. But at the same time, you'd rather slip than have a full-fledged relapse, because that means that you've really gotten entrenched and ingrained again in that behavior. Now, Dr. Patrick Carnes really advocates that he advocates a task-centered recovery program. And he has trained us to believe that we need to have our clients go through individual therapy, group therapy, 12-step therapy. You need to get a sponsor. There needs to be some sort of family participation and recovery. And then you need to work on individual issues like your exercise, your nutrition. Because as you're improving and as you are accessing your resources, there's research that shows that brain imaging depicts that we need at least 2 years to alter synaptic connection to healthier functioning. And that means that really to change the brain, it requires a minimum of 2 years. And that addiction in many, many ways is like a stroke. Part of the brain literally can no longer be used. I was telling a family today that I'm a brief strategic therapist. I try to do the majority of my work in 8 to 12 sessions. But this is not therapy that's going to be brief. Recovery is a 3 to 5 year process. And there are 4 million people out there that need treatment for not only chemical dependency, but also for the eating disorders, gambling, sexual addiction, financial disorders. I mean, they truly do go hand in hand. So, Dr. Carnes has taught us to use this recovery task model, where initially you break through the denial and you really get a good idea of understanding your addiction. On some level, you surrender and you do some damage control. And as you establish sobriety, of course, you're going to improve integrity and you're going to need to create a culture of support. And I can't emphasize enough that that culture of support usually means the 12-step program. Now, I said it last week, and I'll say it again. A lot of men come to me, and it's like they don't want to go to 12-step programs, but they are willing to go through church to something called Celebrate Recovery, which I call it's Recovery Light. It's a wonderful system to get you some needed help if you've got some issues or problems. But for full-fledged addiction, it's just not enough. And so if you're going to that kind of support group, I applaud you, but I'd ask you to step it up and do 12-step too. Then when we look at task 8 through 19, you know, you have to kind of get into the emotional issues of your addiction. So we look at the multiple addictions. What are your cycles of abuse? How can we help you to reduce the shame, which is the prevailing emotion that occurs whenever you have an addiction? You absolutely feel like crapola. And the difference between shame and guilt is guilt is something whereby you feel like you've done something wrong. But shame is actually about feeling like you are a worthless person. And, you know, it's very difficult to work through shame unless you have a psychotherapist, somebody who gets that. And although a lot of therapists do a real good job with shame, I got to tell you, I'm very biased. I think to really do this kind of work, you need to be a certified sexual addiction therapist. Or I've got some friends that are in recovery themselves, and they're really good at what they do. And so I would suspect that although they may take a different approach than I do, they have a lot to offer in the field of therapy. And of course, probably the best of both worlds, and I cannot claim this myself because I am not recovered. I don't have this issue, but there's a lot of therapists and a lot of helping professionals that either were in this business and had this problem or got recovered and decided to go into the business because they wanted to help. And for many of you who have ever done a 12-step recovery model, you know that the 12th step is about giving back and helping. So that's always really, really important. You know, if you've got a therapist who's an addict himself, recovering addict, and has been trained as a certified sexual addiction therapist, you've got a gold mine going on. And we're going to be talking to some of them in the next month or two. Now, interestingly, as we speak, there is this Recovery Start Kit. Certified sexual addictions have access to it. I've got some. And it's a wonderful program to go through. You really need to use a certified sexual addiction therapist. And so for people that don't have somebody in their own city, state, town, country, whatever, there's many people that do Skype. I do Skype. I will work this recovery kit with you via Skype. And I have to say there are a lot of wonderful things about Skype. Skype takes you there. Skype, you know, you can see me, I can see you, and I can help you work through the recovery kit. It's like being in the office. Okay, it's not exactly like being in the office, but I'm telling you, it's the next best thing. It's really, really amazing. Now, if you're listening to this program, you probably don't have limits on your internet. But there are a lot of people that are working the program, and they do have limits. They can't get on the internet. And if you can't get on the internet, it's going to make Skyping a little bit more difficult. But, you know, in doing this recovery kit, it's a $300 kit that takes you through your first 140 days of recovery. And for somebody who keeps slipping or relapsing, it's also a great way to get back involved with the right steps to getting your life back on track. Because there's so much to do, you know. There's conflicts to resolve, and there's restoring sexuality and making it healthy. You know, there's developing your relationship, because sexual addiction 100% affects your relationships. You know, more than likely you either have objectified your partner because all you can do is see the sexual side of things, or you don't objectify your partner and you stay as far away from him or her as you can because you don't want anything to do with normal sex. You don't even know what normal sex is anymore because your vision of sex is whatever sex you have fallen prey to, whether that be prostitutes or sexually explicit talk or pornography. Chat rooms, maybe it's, you know, pain exchange. It matters not. You know what unhealthy sex is. How do you know? Because you don't let anybody else know you're doing it. So it's really, really important to kind of work through things. And there, if you're kind of questioning, gosh, might I have a problem? There is an absolute system by which you can actually take a test. I can help you with that, get you the right test, and it will tell you what types of sexual issues you have and what you need to do about it. It's called the SDI, and it's a sexual dependency inventory test. It has been used by thousands of people. It is a research-based assessment, and I find that there it's really helpful. It kind of comes with its own workbook to get you started so that you know what you can do. And I'm really a big believer in this recovery kit. Like I said, it's $300. That's basically my cost. But if you absolutely are broke and you don't have any money at all, then you scrape $30 together and you get Facing the Shadows, which is a workbook that you can get through gentlepath.com. That's G-E-N-T-L-E, path.com. Or Amazon.com. It's written by Dr. Carnes, and it is, I don't want to say it's the Bible, because really the Green Book, the SAA book, is the Bible, but it is the therapeutic Bible that helps you to work through the different tasks. You know, it has you identify things that you need to do in your life, like come up with a secret list, or come up with a problems list, or come up with a consequence list, so that you can really assess what kind of damage have you done and what are you going to need to do to make that right. And I can offer you the SDI debrief so that we can determine what is the appropriate plan. What do we need to do to get you back on task? So that's just a little bit about sexual addiction. Again, if you have any questions, feel free to give me a call. That number is 646-595-3284. Your call is anonymous, although you will be on the air. So it's not like people won't hear your voice. But I'm telling you, that's the beautiful thing about internet radio, is that truly, people don't know who you are. You don't have to give a name. You just need to kind of talk about your experience. And I guarantee you there has been a lot of unusual experiences. That's the good news. You're not alone. And, you know, if you think you are, then get on the net and look up sexual addiction and order the book SAA. That is kind of an amazing book because it goes through the 12 steps and how that can be helpful to you. And then it gives you stories of different people and what they've had to go through. And it's really an amazing group of stories that reminds you you're not alone. And you know, isn't that what makes you feel better, is to know that you're not alone, that there are people that can 100% treat you. They know what they're doing. They know what they need to do. And they're there for you. You know, I remember first getting into this business. I was working with kids. And I was getting so many kids that I was getting referrals, and they were on the bus, and they were participating in oral sex. And when I talked with them, they would look at me, and they really looked kind of dumbfounded. They had been so desensitized that they really thought it was just like kissing. And then, in addition to that, group mentality would take place. And there would be kids on the bus that would actually get out their phones and they would videotape these encounters. And you know the rest of the story. Then they would send this stuff out to their friends and it would go viral. And I had administrators from, you know, elementary and middle schools, you know, that were beside themselves saying, what can we do about this? Because by the time a boy is 11 or 12, he will have seen 20 hours of pornography. hardcore intense pornography. And when kids get that kind of desensitization, their emotional, physical, and psychological psyche lapse judgment, and they just don't know what to do. They don't know right from wrong. They don't know what's normal and what's atypical. And, you know, if we're seeing this with kids these days, you can imagine that it's going to impact the kind of relationships that they have with other kids, with boyfriends and girlfriends. And, you know, it just gets worse. It progresses. So we got to stop it now. I think, you know, you heard me say that anybody who's got this illness is a pioneer in so many ways. And by pioneer, I really mean that, you know, although this has been around for a long time, it truly has never been as epidemic as it is today. So let me ask you, if you just took a look at yourself for a second, and you were to divide, if you drew a big square and you divided it in fours, and you were going to look at what you might be addicted to, write down the things that you might actually be dependent upon. Now, it might be something like alcohol or drugs, cocaine, meth, morphine, heroin, nicotine, prescription drugs, caffeine, or marijuana. And then there's something called process addictions. And those are actual behaviors. So might you be addicted to sex or work or exercise? Maybe it's as simple as video games or food, gambling, shopping, e-trading, anything that really has to do with money. And, of course, the Internet and or cybersex. Now, that would be in your top quadrants. Now, your bottom quadrants would be feelings. Think about, what does sexual addiction do for you? How does it numb you? Does it numb the rage, your fear? Does it numb love or loss? I always say there are five primary feelings, and they are anger, sadness, loneliness, fear, and happiness. So if you're looking at the first four, how do you deal with your anger, your sadness, your loneliness, and your fear? And then last but not least, in that other quadrant of the square, look at your compulsive attachments and ask yourself, do you hang out with troubled people? Do you pathologically give, either emotionally or physically? Do you like to rescue people? Do you enjoy drama? Are you codependent? Do you have to help? Are you co-addicted? You know, maybe you're not the addict, but absolutely, indeed, you love somebody who has an addiction, and as a result, you're a spendaholic or you're a workaholic. It's important to kind of realize the multiple addictions in your family, in your life, with your partner, with yourself, because it helps to break through the denial. And that's really important. So as I am kind of winding up tonight, I would plead with you to get that Facing the Shadows. There's another great book called The Recovery Zone, and it's subtitled Making Changes That Last, The Internal Tasks, again by Patrick Carnes. And, you know, he's not the only one that has written about sexual addiction. He has trained so many people who have now written their own books, and that's who we're going to have some guests, some experts in the field on this. But it's a great place to start because he talks about something that's really, it really helps you identify your own behaviors. He says, imagine yourself that you draw a circle, and inside that circle you draw another circle, and inside that circle you draw a smaller circle. Now, the inner circle, the smallest circle, are your addictive behaviors. The middle circle are those behaviors that, you know, they're kind of like forks in the road. You do that behavior, and sometimes you may participate in actual addictive behaviors, and sometimes not. They're slippery slopes. And then the outer behaviors are the good behaviors, behaviors that are good for you. So let's take a look at those. If you had to think about your life, what are some healthy behaviors that you 100% know contribute to good mental and physical health? Maybe that's exercise. Maybe that's eating right. Maybe that's going to sleep, getting good rest. Perhaps it's setting boundaries with family, learning how to say no, going for mental health. You know, it might be a hobby you do. You know, maybe you play tennis or volleyball or racquetball. Maybe you go for walks. You walk your dog. You spend time with the kids. You have healthy sex. So write down what some of those behaviors are in your outer circle. And now let's take a look at some of those middle circle behaviors. Those are the behaviors, as I indicated, that are slippery slopes. They're the ones that could get you into trouble. You know, for many people, they look like getting on the internet when your wife or husband isn't home. Going into a chat room when you know you're going to be involved with somebody other than your partner. Looking at a Victoria's Secret because it's going to get you involved in fantasy sex. Maybe that's driving down a particular street where you used to pick up escorts, or surfing the television in your hotel room when you're on a business trip and you know you're going to see some adult previews. Maybe that's having over two drinks, because when you have over two drinks, your inhibitions drop and you start partaking in things that you shouldn't. That's your middle circle. And then, of course, the inner circle are the actual behaviors that show loss of control. Voyeurism, fantasy sex, exhibitionism, internet porn. You know what those behaviors are. So this week I'm going to give you the homework assignment of drawing your three circles. And if you have any questions, you can feel free to email me at carolthecoach@aol.com. And know that I am here in any way to help refer you to the right people, get you to the right book, start you on the right program, get you in the right hospital. As James Taylor says, you got a friend. So I will see you again next week. I'll see if I can't fix that intro for both of us. And we do have a guest. I'm pulling it out as we speak, so you'll know who you can look forward to hearing from. Because, like I said, I run with a great circle of people who, I kid you not, have so much expertise in the field. And they have a lot to offer, you know, I know that you'd probably like to hear from other people. So next week I have John and Elaine Leadham, and they wrote a book called One in the Spirit, a meditation course for recovering couples. And I'll tell you what, their book has been endorsed by my absolute favorite person, Claudia Black, who does a lot of addiction work. She's the author of It'll Never Happen to Me. And she says, at last, a book that does more than merely talk about intimacy. John and Elaine have offered a gift to all couples who are serious about relational intimacy and their spirituality. Their book is practical, directional, and inspirational for couples. And I got to tell you, I've been really looking at it. And it breaks down, in terms of weeks, a challenge, a reflection, and a prayer. And we're going to be talking about that. How can that help you to have healthier relationships? And these two are amazing people, and they, you know, have put it together just for us. So we'll catch you next week, and we'll be so looking forward to that. Feel free to email me at carolthecoach@aol.com. Take a look at my website, www.sexhelpwithcarolthecoach.com. And just remember, you're not alone. There's a lot of help out there for you. And I appreciate you listening. Have a great week. And remember, there will only be one of you at all times. So fearlessly be yourself and be the kind of person that you know that you want to be. We'll talk to you next week.